Don't have time to read that research paper you saved? Chelsea and Olivia want to help you out. We know how it is. That's why we read it for you. Welcome to the Exercise Science Too Long Didn't Read podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, guess what?
What?
This episode is all about technology.
Yay!
My favorite. Toys, gadgets, all the things.
All the things. Well, and what's fun about technology, especially lately, is that it's been advancing a lot with the pandemic.
Excellent.
Right? So we have a few things to talk about today. We'll talk about the new things in technology, and then we'll dive into a research paper that talks about technology as well.
Fantastic.
Right.
So, what's new in home exercise technology, you ask? Let me tell you.
Ooh.
We have wall-mounted TV-like gyms. Some brand examples of those would be Mirror and Tonal. So, Tonal has a digital smart home gym at about $3,000 or so. And then there's the Fitness Mirror from Mirror. That's about $1,500. And then there's a similar one by a company called Tempo. And it's a home gym. That's about $2,500. There's also a under-desk treadmills. Those can start at $600 and go all kinds of, all the way up.
Which I want one so bad.
I looked at getting one.
Yeah.
When I moved to working from home last March 2020. Right when, you know, everything was shutting down. But I read some interesting articles that talked about the difference between the under-desk treadmills and the under-desk bicycles or cycles.
Yeah.
And this office kind of just did their own sort of experiment with them, and they recorded observations that said that the bikes were harder to concentrate on while doing complex tasks.
I can see that, because you, like with the pedaling, it's almost like you're being like jarred up and down every time.
Yeah, that, and you have to kind of exert more, you have to exert the force to push the pedals, so there's more thought into how fast you're going, what your rotations are. But with the under-desk treadmill, you just set your speed and move your feet and don't fall off.
True.
That's pretty much it. So they're very cool. I'm super into the under-desk treadmills. There's also under-desk ellipticals and smaller just foot pedal bicycles. So not ones that you would sit on, but just ones that go under the desk. So with the QB, for example, they're a seated elliptical. They really market theirs for older people, people with joint issues. It's a much smoother, sort of more of a back and forth motion than an up and down. It's also good for under desks because, again, your knees aren't going very far up and down, so you're not going to bang your knee into the on the underside of your desk. So,
oh, that's true.
That's pretty cool. And then we have the Bowflex Velcor unstationary bikes that can actually tilt side to side. So you're not just on a boring so cool. bike, right? You're not just on like, I'm riding a bike, whatever. It like, you've got the video screen. You can be on like a hiking, not hiking, like a trail ride on the side of a mountain and you're leaning and trying real world. I think all they're missing is just like some sort of fake gnats that just fly out of the thing and hit you in the face.
I was thinking more like a fan, but I guess you could implement that yourself.
Well,
huh?
Yeah, you can. They have clip-on fans and yeah. Get a little mist or, oh, that fresh mountain mist in your face.
Get some essential oils on your fan.
Put a little cedar, maybe some fabric softener in there. Oh, it's so fresh. I feel like I'm outside and I'm not.
Like in Big Bang Theory, when I was watching it earlier, he was like playing a video game on the Wii and he's like, you wanted to get more fresh air.
That's fantastic. So anywho, stationary bikes like the Bowflex one, I mean, they're proud of it, but that's some pretty advanced tech. So they start at like $1,700. Kind of depends on your what screen size you pick. So that's kind of high level some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. With the wall mounted ones that we talked about earlier, tonal mirror, some of them are just a mirror that stick on the wall and it's connected to the internet, probably your Wi-Fi, and it'll have trainer workout things that play on it so you can follow along. Very Peloton-esque, but in a mirror so you can see yourself, so you can check your form, make sure that you're doing what they're doing while not having to take your eyes off the screen. So those are pretty cool. Other ones just have weights and things or a pull-out bench that flips down like the old ironing boards that used to hang on the wall. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
That kind of come with it, and it's not necessarily as video-centric. So, anywho.
But I personally would want tonal because it has weights inside of it. So it's like a cable machine.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So it has the attachments like you do at the gym at your cable machine. So you can get like a T-bar, you can get a rope, you can get the V-bar.
Some tricep action in there.
Yeah, exactly. And it can go up to 200 pounds, which I would think would fit most people's regimens. Yeah, I mean, it would be my dream. I wonder
what kind of hardware you have to mount that sucker.
I know.
Because it's heavy. It's going to be heavy by itself. Also, you're pulling and yanking on it.
Well, and like, can my wall handle that? How did they figure that out? I don't know.
Might have to go to the website and see.
Yeah.
At some point.
That would be interesting to find out.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can move on to the research study that I found for today's episode.
You found research papers on at-home tech?
Well, wearable technology.
Ah, okay. So but your Fitbits, your Jawbones. Do they even make still? I wonder if Jawbone even still makes them. I had one. I went through a couple.
I don't know if
it's Jawbone. Warranty issues. Your Apple Watch, your Fitbit, your Garmin, your...
Almost everybody has a wearable watch these days.
Yeah, that's true.
And this study was published in 2019 by Carrie McFadden and King Lee. I am guessing how to say your name, so I apologize, King Lee, if I am saying your name incorrectly. But their paper was called Motivational Readiness to Change Exercise Behaviors, an analysis of the difference in exercise, wearable exercise tracking, technology, and exercise frequency, intensity, and time with values and BMI scores in university students.
That's a really long title.
Yeah. I ran out of breath there for a minute.
It's got a lot of meat to it.
It does. It's very inclusive, and it tells you exactly what the paper is going to be about, which is nice.
That's true. Then it would be very helpful if you're doing a search.
Yes.
Lots of keywords to hone in on.
Yes. But the purpose of the study was to look at college students and wearable technology. So what they did was they looked at the relationship between students' motivation to exercise and their motivation to wear exercise technology. So I thought this would be an interesting topic to talk about in the episode today. To talk about their methods that they did in the study. So they used some standardized measures, which the first one was the University of Rhode Island Readiness to Change Assessment Questionnaire, which was adapted for wearable technology. So basically they took the same questions and then they just added some questions about wearable technology with similar phrasing.
So readiness to change, would that be someone's adaptability? I'm trying to figure out how to say it. So there's people that might be very put off by certain things up front. They don't deal with change easily. They don't buy into new technology easily. They're not an early adapter, if you will. Is that kind of what that questionnaire might have been honing in on? Like, are you the type of person that would be into something new, or would you not be that type of person?
kind of what it's really looking at is its phases of change. So you have like your pre-contemplation, which is what you were just describing. So they're the people that are resistant to it. They don't really want to do it. They're not really interested. And then you have your contemplation. So those are the people that are like, I want to wear a watch, but they don't have one, or they haven't taken the step to purchase one. And then you have, I'm going blank what the next phase is. It's like the active phase, or whatever word is the correct one, where it's basically the phase that they are currently doing it. And then you have the maintenance phase. Yeah. And me. And then you have your maintenance phase, which is the final phase, which is means that you've been doing it and you've been doing it for a while. It's a part of your, it's becoming a part of you. So the change is pretty much complete, or almost complete.
When it's charging, it tells me my text messages, my time.
It's your whole life.
It is.
It is.
It's for a person with ADHD, my schedule pops up on it. It reminds me of all the things, my alarm.
Which is pretty nice.
Yeah.
So the questionnaire that the students filled out had 48 questions, and it was there on a 5-point Likert scale. So that's your scale, kind of like agree.
I Liker it.
That's your somewhat agree, and strongly agree kind of scale.
Oh. So you like it-ish, or you super like it.
Yeah. Or gotcha. You can be like, I disagree, or somewhat disagree.
Neutral.
Yeah. There's lots of different ways to describe it. So in the study, they surveyed 417 students. 115 of the students met the fit requirements. So those are the ACSM recommendations for your frequency, your intensity, and your time with exercise. 70 regularly exercised in the past 6 months, while half of that 70, about 31, wore an exercise watch on a regular basis. So of the people that met the requirements, only 70 of them had reported regularly exercising. So if they were meeting the requirements, it must be new.
How many of them would have answered that they did not regularly wear the device, and then I would wonder why.
Yeah.
Like, do they have kind of a crappy device? Are they only using the heart rate monitor, like the chest strap? So you're really only wearing it when you work out, whereas a watch you wear kind of all the time.
Well, like my first Garmin watch was a men's watch because I got it secondary or secondhand. So I would only wear it whenever I ran because it's so large.
Yeah. I guess those are kind of subjective questions too. So you're up to the person's interpretation of the question when they read it a little bit.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's that way with any survey or questionnaire. You have to, like, what was their mood that day? What were they going through? Did they even read the question fully?
C to everything. It's always C.
There's some people that do that, or they choose a pattern. I mean, whatever. But, So 28 were least likely to wear technology in this study. And then 90 of the 115 who met the fit requirements were considered regular technology wearers. And then 31 met the fit requirements. And 53 met the frequency and time. So 53 people did not meet all three, the frequency, intensity, and time, but they did meet their frequency and time.
So those would be probably your daily lunch walkers.
Yes.
Low intensity, but they're still doing some sort of movement.
Those are also the people that may count exercise for activities that are not actually exercise. They'd be considered just physical activity movements.
Oh, like gardening.
Yeah. Walking across campus. They may be like, oh, it's a 5-minute walk from this class to this class. That counts.
Hey, there are some times hoofing from one class to another because for some dumb reason, the buildings had to be a mile away.
No, I'm not arguing. I mean,
that would be intensity, not necessarily time.
There have been times that I've been booking it and I show up to class and I go up the stairs because I'm a kinesiology major and I'm like,
sit down, sweating, fanning yourself. No, stop. Come on, deodorant, work. Ugh.
Oh, and that's whenever I'm taking, because of course it's got to be winter at this point, whenever, because this is when it most likely happened. It most likely happened in winter when I'm wearing a coat. I've got my bags. The dog keeps making noises.
Sir, bless you.
A hilarious limitation that I found in this study, well, I think it's hilarious, is that the survey takers, the students who took the surveys, mm-hmm. were health studies classes.
Wouldn't that make their study potentially a little slightly biased?
You would think. But then you start looking at the data and you're like, really low numbers met the requirements for, so it's kind of, you would think it would be skewed, but
I guess maybe that kind of looks at the average, you still have average college student behavior, average human in their 20s behavior, mm-hmm. Kind of affecting it as well. Plus, they always say doctors are the worst patients. So maybe there's some sort of aspect of that involved as well.
I am the worst person to be personally trained. I can agree with that. Because the whole time I'm judging them.
You're judging their training?
Yes. Same thing with group fitness.
Well, I wouldn't explain it that way. I would explain it like this.
Exactly. I'd be like, well, that's not how you do a push-up, but okay.
Again, back to our prior episode. If you get stronger in your butt doing push-ups, you're probably doing them wrong.
And if you eat the ice cream, that's not a valid measure.
But it's delicious.
Yes, it is. So
50... You ate our test subject.
Oh, that sounds like
I named
t-shirt.
Him Clint.
So 54% of them were health studies majors.
Oh, half-ish. Oh, no, you said 400 and some odd.
Yeah, so...
So who were the other 350-ish?
Well, this is like the health studies class. So this is like the healthy life skills, whatever the name of the class is. So this is the class that everyone in the college or university has to take as like a freshman or sophomore.
The generic health class. This is an apple. It's good for you.
Yes.
You should eat one every now and then.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And so 54% of them were health studies majors.
So like you.
Yeah, me. Okay. Kinesiology, exercise science, public health, those majors. But then 70% of them were female.
That seems accurate.
For who participates in the survey, yes. But when it comes to population... I don't think females are 70% of the world.
No, that is not a world representative sample, but I do think it maybe speaks to a bit stereotyping a bit, but we ladies like to do things. We're joiners.
We're joiners. That's true.
Clubs. Subscription boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Groups, therapy, workout, mimosa, ladies who lunch. We like to do things and we like to do it together.
We do. That's a good point.
And we apologize if you can hear the dog barking. It pandemic life, everyone's used to it by now.
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully you don't hear my dog barking and going, oh, I'm going to stop listening to this because this is annoying.
If you could just see his little face. He walks up and looks at me from underneath his eyebrows. So sad. Please play with me.
He goes, why are you talking into the mic instead of playing? So their conclusion was that the study showed a positive correlation for wearable technology and meeting the fit guidelines. So even though the numbers were kind of all over the place, it did kind of show that the people, so 115 of the 417 met the requirements, 70 were considered regular exercisers, and then 90 of the 115 were considered regular technology wearers. So if you look at the 90 of the 115, I didn't save what percentage that is, but I mean, math. It's close to 90%.
We're here to read for you. We're not here to math for you.
That's true.
This is not too long didn't math.
That is my life. Too long didn't math. Yeah.
1,000%, which is also not a real thing, and it really annoys some people when you say that. But I'm using it to exercise our point. You see what I accidentally did there.
Oh, yes. So the point is of the study, I really think, is that if you exercise regularly, you're probably going to be more interested in wearing a watch. You're probably going to be more likely to wear a watch, especially in college age students in the year 2019 when this paper was published.
Well, I guess that gives me some follow-up questions. So
okay.
The study was just one questionnaire.
Yes.
So it's a picture of a pinpoint in time of sorts. I mean, I know they asked, did you work out in the last 6 months? But that's still a segment of time that they're looking at. So they didn't check back in with anybody.
No.
To see if it changed. I wonder if there were any questions around, did you purchase the watch after you started exercising or before?
Oh, that'd be a good question.
Because if they started exercising and then bought the watch, then they might have already built up the healthy habits. So they were really just continuing it. The watch was just giving them more information. Maybe that would have helped them reach the intensity part if they were missing that before. Maybe not. But if they already had the watch and then started exercising, I think that would tell a different story about how the wearable encouraged them to improve their exercise mm-hmm. habits than the other way around.
Yeah, definitely.
See, there's always questions. I have questions.
Well, and that's what's good about research papers is that you can get those questions and then you can try to answer them as a researcher yourself.
Can I just like, maybe just, I'll just find another one.
Well, thank you all for listening to today's episode. I hope you learned something.
I know I did.
Well, good. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Exercise Science TLDR podcast show. If you want to hear more from us, please write a review and subscribe. Join us online at exerciscienctldr.com. Remember, if it's too long and you didn't read it, we read it so you don't have to.